Tonight, could Vince McMahon be headed back to WWE TV? Logan Paul has the WWE Universal Championship in his sights in his third match ever. NXT gets an old coat of paint. AEW moves on without several core talents. And the PWI 500 has been released. We meet one of the head writers from Pro Wrestling Illustrated tonight on Sunday night's main event.
We love professional wrestling.
Acknowledge me.
This is Sunday night's main event.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
On the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Because you love something fresh in you, don't you?
We deserve better, people.
The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
My God, what an impact.
Hey, it's Mike McGuire. Welcome to Canada's wrestling radio show, Sunday night's main event, powered by Great Lakes Beer, a fiercely independent brewery. Order online at greatlakesbeer.com. We're for free on the air on TSN Radio, the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks, and through lots of affiliate stations across the country. Also, you can find this and back episodes at snmeradio.com. If you want to get the show early with full-length interviews and daily podcasts about a buck a week, you can do so. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. We got a lot to talk about and not a lot of time. So, pitter patter, let's get at her. Here is this week's five count.
You want to hear the breaking news?
Big story this weekend is the main event for WWE's Crown Jewel being set. Yesterday, at a press conference in Las Vegas, Triple H made an announcement for the annual Saudi Arabia show.
The biggest spectacle that will be happening on November 5th in Saudi Arabia. When Roman Reigns will take on Logan Paul. For the undisputed WWE Universal Championship.
This will be Logan Paul's third match ever. Crown Jewel emits from Saudi Arabia on November the 5th. Well, time will tell if it's curiosity or a rising trend, but AEW actually had a big ratings win this week without a lot of their big names. They actually saw a spike in ratings, with the finals determined for their Grand Slam World Title Tournament to take place next week in New York. With all the scuttlebutt starting to die down around Punk, the Bucks, Kenny Omega, and others, it's interesting to note that the rating was still pretty solid throughout the entire episode. The main event from New York will be the Blackpool Combat Club's Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley facing off for the AEW Championship. Well, Zeke, we barely knew you. Could Elias be drifting back onto WWE TV? Ever since the Ezekiel character was written off of Raw, there's been no mention of him since. Given some time, Elias could be making a return, as the character has been reportedly worked back into the internal roster at WWE. Congratulations to Mandy Rose and Tino Sabatelli. They are both officially off the market, as Mandy Rose announced on her Instagram that she and Tino had been engaged. Now, Tino was an on-again, off-again talent on NXT and then has been doing a few matches over at AEW. Mandy Rose, currently on top of her game in NXT. We wish nothing but the best for the couple, and our condolences go out to Otis. And Malakai Black, who's taken some time off from AEW, has said this is not goodbye. In fact, he was at an independent wrestling show in Pomona, California, and had this to say.
Allow me to take a few weeks, maybe a few months, to just recalibrate myself.
We're going to try and break down the PWI 500 with Al Castle from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Plus, Dave Meltzer is going to take us through some of these crazy stories, including a potential TV return for Vince McMahon on Sunday night's main event.
This is Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
When I'm on me boat, battling the waves, trying to gather me fish, it takes two important factors. A keen eye and a peeled ear. Me pappy told me, when you least expect it, expect it. And don't let a little choppy water get in your way. So when I pops the top of my Lake Effect IPA, I don't fret when the crest of a wave slaps me hard and I spill a little bit down me chin. I think of it as a favor, cause it's not too often out here that I gets to wash me beard. Go with the Lake Effect. It'll guide you right every time.
Lake Effect IPA, now available at an LCBO near you, the GLB retail store, and GreatLakesBeer.com.
It's time! It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's Main Event.
For those of you new to our show, this is the time where we catch up with Dave Meltzer. What would you consider your title? I mean, journalist is one. Yeah. Insider, for sure. What else would you consider yourself, Dave?
I don't really think about it, honestly. I am a reporter. And I mean, a lot of people will say other things, but primarily reporter and a business analyst.
We're getting a lot of stuff coming in. Sports Kita just put out this interesting rumor mill article, and they were saying that there's reports that Vince McMahon could be getting a massive send-off at WrestleMania next year. Have you heard anything about this at all?
I mean, yeah, I've heard this for, you know, a week or two or so, that the Vince McMahon Hall of Fame thing with WrestleMania in Los Angeles makes sense to do it. No one has told me, yes, this is it. I'll actually try to check on it this week, but it makes sense to me, and I would be expecting it, yeah.
This seems a little out of character for Vince, who for the longest time didn't want to be acknowledged. But at the same time, the only public image we've seen of him was on his birthday when he was out with John Cena. And it's just
he tried to hide from the camera.
Yeah, it didn't seem like the Vince of old at all. So do you think maybe this is something that the family wants to do for him? Or do you think this is something that should be happening in general based on how his exit was from the company?
Well, I mean, the exit was very weird, but, you know, you can't have a legitimate WWE Hall of Fame without Vince McMahon. No matter how staunch people want to be about what happened, and they have every right to be that way.
Absolutely.
Vince McMahon is too big of a figure in WWE history. He is the biggest figure by leaps and bounds. And so, you know, even more than, you know, I mean, Hogan was big. Vince was bigger than anyone. This year's the year to do it. And no one has confirmed that to me, but it makes perfect sense.
It'll be a big WrestleMania either way. It's in L.A., you know, talk of The Rock being there. There'll be a lot of eyes on the show, most likely. Speaking of eyes on shows, these shows don't get as many eyes on them usually, but this time it might be a different story, and it might be eyes outside of the regular wrestling fan. Yesterday at a press conference in Las Vegas, it was announced that for his third match ever, Logan Paul will be getting a shot at the WWE Universal Heavyweight Championship against Roman Reigns at Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia. Has this been planned for a while? Does this make sense to you in any way?
After the Clash of the Castle pay-per-view, I asked somebody there, you know, because the way it ended, I thought, oh my God, you're going to do Roman Reigns and Tyson Fury in Saudi Arabia. That's what I thought they were going to do just from the finish of the show. It's like, no, because I knew that Roman Reigns wasn't booked for Philadelphia. He's like, oh, so Seth Rollins or Kevin Owens? And it's like, no. And then I said, well, what is it? And then I started getting ignored again. So I knew it was somebody out of the box because there was nobody else. I'm sure it was planned at least the first week of September and probably long before that. Logan Paul probably threw people off scent because after his match with The Miz at SummerSlam, that the thought was, okay, what's he going to do next? And he said, well, I'm going to go into boxing for a while. So figured, okay, next year, WrestleMania. I think this has been planned probably since he did so well at SummerSlam that they had the confidence that they could put him in a main event match. And it's Saudi. I mean, there have been some really bad matches in Saudi Arabia over the years that have been pushed. So Logan Paul's a really interesting character. Perfect example was when he first got really big and the talks with WWE started. I don't know if this is 100% true, but this is what Paul Levesque said. You know, he said, I had no idea who this guy was, but my daughters did. And right. Jake and Logan Paul, to me, I sort of heard who they were before they did their first, the big boxing match that did the big internet pay-per-view number with, was a KSI and Logan Paul years and years ago. So at that point, I mean, I had heard the buildup for it and it's going to be really big. And it's like, you know, two YouTube guys in a boxing match. And then it did like 700,000 buys. So it's like, okay.
Right.
They've ushered in the celebrity boxing thing, which is actually in many ways getting more mainstream than real boxing.
Oh, boxing, I mean, is, yeah, struggling so hard with these celebrity, but yeah.
So I know who he is, and I know he's a big deal, and he's a big deal in Saudi Arabia, and he's a big deal to the Saudi Arabian prince. And that's the whole thing of these shows that I think people, you know, somebody goes to me like, is Logan Paul going to help sell tickets or is he going to draw TV ratings? It's like nothing to do with that. Tickets in Saudi Arabia mean nothing. OK, it's not even part of the game. Of course, TV numbers, whatever. You know, if he draws younger viewers, that's good. But it's not a play for TV ratings. It is a play because the prince wants celebrity fights in Saudi Arabia to build the name in the media of Saudi Arabia. And Logan Paul will get more of the type of press that Saudi Arabia is looking for than Kevin Owens or Seth Rollins or, you know,
even a Drew rematch or something, right? Like having a Drew rematch would make sense because of the screwball finish, but.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, so, you know, people go, well, you know, first match and everything. I mean, didn't Kane get a championship match with Brock in his first match?
I'd have to look back, but I don't doubt you there.
And that was Saudi Arabia also. That's what Saudi Arabia is there for. Saudi Arabia is for matches that the prince wants that will get press attention around the world for Saudi Arabia. So this is a great match for that.
With Logan Paul's star power and with his devoted following, and again, 100 million YouTube subscribers, is Logan Paul losing a safe way to play this match? Because if you're attracting all these Logan Paul fans, he's gone in and he's gone the distance with Floyd Mayweather, so to speak.
It's pro wrestling. People understand pro wrestling. I mean, I think everyone knows he's going to lose. That's not really an issue.
And, but is he going to lose, though? Is it going to be that? Or do you think it'll be a screwball finish where he wins by DQ or something? Because I just,
well, I suppose
I think if they're trying to get those eyes on him, and Logan Paul is you know, the fans' golden boy. His fans want to see him do well.
Yeah. But wrestling fans want to see him lose.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw the segment Friday night, and he comes out as a babyface, and they booed the hell out of him. And they cheered Heyman. To wrestling fans, the guy's a heel. But it doesn't matter. It's all about appeasing the prince and getting press. You know, all of your traditional wrestling arguments are out the window because it's not about any of those things. It's not about a babyface being over. No, Roman's, I don't know if Roman gets cheered in Saudi Arabia. It's a different country. Who the hell knows? Hmm. But I mean, if that match was held in Chicago or New York, I mean, Logan Paul's getting booed out of the building.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
It's almost like there's two divisions of WWE these days. There's the shows they put on for the wrestling fans, and then there's the celebrity spectacle shows that Levesque called it in the press conference yesterday. And you know what? I think that's fine. Because, again, they're trying to appeal to a broader audience, and they're trying to get that mainstream notification. Look at who just came on the board, right? They just had members of Disney and former board members from there come on, and people who are experienced in acquisitions and taking care of big business. So I do see the big picture here. I just wonder if we're just going to get a schmoz finish in this as wrestling fans. So
it's not AEW or New Japan where the main event you're going to get a finish. I mean, it's like it's not guaranteed, but I think Roman will win, but it doesn't matter and people will get mad. People got mad at the Drew finish. But when you look at where they're going, and that was another thing I was told about the Drew thing, you know, when Drew lost, it's like, if you look at where we're going, in hindsight, you'll understand why Drew had to lose. And now I do, because this is the match that they wanted for Saudi Arabia. So they could not change the championship.
All right. Well, we could keep going on about this, but there are a few other things to talk about. You had brought up something from that August 24th mandatory meeting that AEW had. This was after everything had just started going sideways there. Kenny Omega stepped up and apparently made a comment that went somewhere along the line of, I wouldn't have hired 8 out of 10 of you. Now, you've reported in the newsletter saying that some people took it as a joke, a dig, but some people actually kind of took it the wrong way. Do you know what his point was for this? Like,
well, I guess they did, but I mean, he said almost everyone that I talked to, and there were most said, look, I don't remember if he said it, and he did say a joke line, and it was clearly a joke line that eventually some people took as a serious line. And the real line that I won't say the biting one, but the important line was the one where he said that this locker room, when we started, was a much better getting along locker room than it is now when we started this company. That's what he said for real. The other thing was just a dig on Will Ospreay, because him and Will Ospreay have this little thing going back and forth, you know, trying to build their match. You know, there is that reality of like, who is the real king of wrestling inside the ring? Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay, you know, the old king and the new king. And they're trying to play it for all it's worth in front of everyone and in social media and all that. But I mean, they just dig at each other. And it's like he looks at Ospreay, he says that line, and he just goes, I'm just joshing with Will Ospreay. Some people, if they wanted to get mad at him, they could have with that line. But the real line was the locker room line. And let's face it, when this thing started in 2019, all this chaos backstage that we hear about, that wasn't there in 2019. To a degree, it is there now. I mean, there's issues in every locker room, but these ones have gotten out. And obviously, with the fight and everything, they've got real serious issues.
I don't think we could have done any more than we did talk about it last week. So if you didn't hear that discussion between Dave and I, head to last week's episode, snmeradio.com. Sticking with AEW, okay, the Bucks are out, Punk's out, Kenny's not there. we still had a wicked solid number. If I'm AEW, I'm like, okay, a lot of our core big stars weren't here, but we still had enough big stars that were here. Is that what you credit for? Is it still a bit of morbid curiosity based on all the scuttlebutt going
on?
No.
If it was morbid curiosity, they would have opened with a giant quarter and then tailed off. Looks like they did the week before.
Right.
This one, their peak in 18 to 49s was the Jericho and Danielson match, and their peak in overall viewers, you know, over an hour into the show with the tag team title match. So they did not open with more viewers than usual. They maintained viewers. So whatever it was that was coming up on the show, whether it's the tag title match, whether it's the Jericho match, it was a great main event for drawing people. That's the reality. Jericho and Danielson was a great main event in hindsight. I mean, it was great in the ring too, but that's the key really to that rating. And then the overall flow of the show, obviously, Jungle Boy, Jay Lethal match did well. The tag title match did well. The women were down a little bit, but still well over a million. It was a very good ratings pattern, as we would say. It was the best rating they've done since June as far as 18 to 49s, and the best they have ever done on TBS, and one of the best in the history of the company in total viewers, and the biggest for whatever reason. I mean, it was the biggest over 50 audience that any AEW show has ever done. And that's always been their toughest hurdle, is that audience, because, you know, they're new and it's a different style and everything like that. But whatever reason, this show appealed to that audience. And you know what? Maybe that's Jericho and Danielson.
Well, either way, it worked for sure. And yeah, great matches all around. A fun show to watch for a lot of reasons. Again, I don't want to delve into everything. I'm looking more from a health standpoint and a possible future standpoint, even though I'm sure it's way too soon to tell. Has there been any update on CM Punk?
Oh, no, nothing. Nothing. I mean, he had the surgery. He's going to be out for a long, long time. Who knows what his status of the company is? And we probably, you know, I'm sure that the idea is to bring him back. Everything about this, when it comes to those guys, it's a very tricky situation. And that's why we've heard nothing, really.
All right. Last but not least here, Dave, about to talk to Al Castle from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Their list, which they've admitted, follows a lot of storyline, like wins and losses and things like that. But the PWI 500 is out now. Your thoughts on, well, Roman being in the top spot and maybe some of the other names?
It's PWI 500. I mean, I know a lot of people take it seriously. And the day it comes out, obviously, there's going to be a lot of discussion and everything like that. I mean, I guess if you were going to ask me, like, who do you think they're going to put in the top five, number one spot? And I go, Roman, he was champion all year. Figured that. I mean, like, look, I've figured John Moxley and Will Ospreay to be higher. Yeah, of course. But any list is going to have things like that. Every PWI list I'll look through and go, this guy's too low. This guy's too high. I couldn't do a list that wouldn't be subject to a ton of criticism, because it's just impossible not to. So it's what it is.
Oh, you do a Mount Rushmore discussion with your friends and it turns into an argument. So, yeah. I mean, it's just the way it is. All right. Well, Dave Meltzer from Wrestling Observer, WrestlingObserver.com is where you can get the weekly readings. And this past week, what can people read about, Dave?
Well, I have a basically go through the details of everything that happened with the AEW situation over the last week with, you know, the people who were reinstated, why they were reinstated, why the people who weren't reinstated were. The nature, a lot of things that revolved around the suspension when it comes to other promotions, people working for other companies, how that all works. And then also, I did a story on how I would kind of revamp the streaming shows that AEW does. And also the way they develop talent. The long run is not necessarily Chris Jericho or John Moxley. The long run is these guys in their 20s and where we're going to be in 5, 6, 7 years. And both AEW and WWE need to constantly create new stars. And the one thing with WWE, you know, I saw, you know, Bron Breakker and people like that, Tyler Bate, that are in their early mid 20s, and AEW's got that with Jungle Boy and all this. And it's just ways to get them to where they can be the guys, you know, Bron Breakker will be one of those guys, and to get some of those guys to where they will be the guys and get more people ready. The future of these companies is in developing stars now that get them as much real world wrestling skills as you can, because WWE has this NXT thing and AEW has Dark and Elevation, but it's not the same type of a system, and just kind of revamp Dark and Elevation to where, you know, it's more geared toward building the full skill set of the younger talent.
That's Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com. Dave, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, have a great week.
Coming up next, we are going to take you deep into the Pro Wrestling Illustrated 500 list that just came out digitally. Al Castle, one of the writers behind the PWI Pro Wrestling Illustrated Top 500. He is next right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If you're a fan of Sunday Night's Main Event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. I'm Mike McGuire, and it's The List, the magazine issue, probably the most coveted publication in pro wrestling every year, and it's out once again. Digital version is available now. The print copy comes out soon, and newsstands, of course, is where we used to always hunt for it. Of course, I'm talking about the PWI 500. Joining me, one of the people behind this epic magazine and this epic list, Al Castle. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Unbelievable. This is a really great pleasure to have you on here. I remember being a kid and waiting for the PWI 500 to come out because, first of all, that was when you got the best pictures of all the top guys and girls, yeah. Right? So, and when you're a kid and you're going by magazine, I mean, this is, we're going to date ourselves here, but, you know, before the internet, where you could just find any picture of your favorite wrestler you wanted, you'd always get a new photo and you'd get some new stuff. And it was always neat to see a perspective that was outside of like a WWF magazine or something like that. For those that don't know who you are, your story, your involvement with PWI, and how it eventually brought you into The List.
Yeah, well, I joined PWI back in 2007. I think, like yourself, I grew up reading the magazines, and the 500 was one of those tentpole issues that you had to have. It was the 500. It was the year-end awards. Maybe a couple others, the supercards, I remember, is a big one. We brought that back a couple of years ago. But yeah, so back in 2007, I joined, and what a thrill. You know, because of the change in the way people work, even before the pandemic, now most of putting it together and meeting with the rest of the staff is virtual. But for years there, part of my, you know, it was like this annual pilgrimage to Bluebell, Pennsylvania, where I would drive up to the PWI offices. It's about two and a half hours. And riders would sort of converge from all different parts of the country, at least the ones that were in semi-driving distance. But some came, you know, drove 6 hours, and we would meet up there in the PWI offices. And over the course of a day, we wouldn't knock out 500, but we would knock out top 10 and beyond, certainly probably around the 100 spot. You know, we were surrounded by mail packages, you know, wrestlers who would send in their 8x10s and maybe a videotape, kind of a highlight reel. So some of that still happens. It's changed. But yeah, what a thrill. So, I mean, I just realized a couple of days ago that I have now worked on half of the PWI 500s because this is the 32nd edition, and I came back 16 years ago. I got on 16 years ago, so this is my 16th, and yeah, that makes half of all the PWI 500s.
Well, now that I have it, I've sent your personal email address out to all my indie wrestlers. Okay. I have not done that, but
I'll just blame Kevin McElvaney.
But it's one of those things where, and you've told the stories of back in the day, it was hard to find talent sometimes to fill 500. Versus now, I can only imagine with the fact that online content is a thing and people can get a hold of you, and you know, you're on Twitter, and there's all sorts of people trying to get noticed and trying to get into this list here. You do have a criteria list that's on the start of the thing, and we'll get to that in a second. But at what point do you as a fan have to take a step back and look at the analytics that you guys have laid out here for what meets the criteria?
Yeah, it's a real challenge. I mean, putting together a list of 10 people would be difficult and be filled with debates and arguments. Putting together 500, it's almost impossible, but obviously not impossible because we do it every year. the criteria helps a lot because when there is some a point of contention, you can look at the criteria, say, well, how many matches did this guy have? How many of those did he win? Who was he working against? How many titles did he win? And you could have something of a scientific approach to everybody's ranking and who does get ranked and who doesn't get ranked. But even that, you know, is never going to give you that objective answer. And at the end of the day, you've got a group of people who have their own views and preferences. Mm-hmm. And I'd be lying to say that doesn't factor in. You know, one thing that we heard a criticism from somebody last week, which I think was really fair, is maybe not enough West Coast representation. And PWI and a lot of the writers were here on the East Coast. So it's true that to some extent, our exposure to independent wrestling is maybe skewed by the fact that at least most of what we see in person is East Coast independent. And we have, you know, writers, including Kevin, who are very, very steeped in the indies and do watch stuff from all over the country and all over the world. And we also have correspondents from other parts of the world and of the country who weigh in. But if you had a bunch of other people do the list, it would be completely different. I'll go one further. Say if you had the same people do the same list over again, it would look a little bit different. It's 500 people. We try to take as scientific approach to it as you can, understanding that you're never going to get everybody to agree, even within our staff.
Yeah. How big is your panel, I guess?
It varies. I mean, we probably the PWI team, gosh, I have in front of me, but it's got to be about a dozen or so people. Okay. It's a smaller group that is hands-on in selecting the PWI 500. But once we have kind of a framework, then we will share it with the rest of the staff and everybody gets some input. And Kevin's very meticulous about this. Getting feedback, making, you know, even stuff like mistakes, you know, let's make sure nobody's listed twice. And it happens from time to time. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure there's no glaring omissions. It's this summer long a process of just constantly being in communication with each other and a few marathon session meetings to bat out certainly the first 100, 200, something like that.
Sounds like being on a jury almost where it's I refuse to take away my stand. That this person should be number 281.
Yeah, and those are really fun. And you know, that kind of thing does happen where, you know, let's say you meet for 3 hours in one night and sometimes you realize like you spent a half hour of it like debating just that, you know, should this guy be 114 or 113? And sometimes it just takes somebody to kind of shake it loose and be like, all right, we have got to move on. You know,
we got other wrestlers to talk about. Yeah. By the way, a shout out to number 281, Shane Taylor. So I'm just, I've got my copy
Shane
here
Taylor,
in front of me.
Yeah, but, I believe we interviewed him on the PWA podcast. So yeah, good to see that he's in there.
And possibly the only other most talked about person than Roman Reigns on this list. Let's give it up for number 500, Dustin Wilson.
Yeah, I can't really tell you much about Dustin Wilson. I think we had some back and forth with him on social media. It's absolutely true that, you know, after number one, it's probably the most looked at position. And over the years, we've had some fun with you know, who's at number one. I think it's probably helped make a lot of independent careers, at least. So, yeah, I can't tell you a whole lot about him, but I know it is a coveted spot.
I have trained. I have wrestled, but never in front of a crowd, so I don't have an official record. But man, if I get that match, you know I'm coming your way. But so, of course, a lot of people are talking about the list. Let's go through the criteria, the Cole's notes, or the shortened version of it, if you could. Just give us kind of the quick rundown here, even like what's on the actual magazine here, the criteria going down.
Yeah, I pulled this up and I think this is from last year's issue, but I think it carries over. And what I've got here is a lot of this goes without saying: win-loss record, technical ability, influence on the sport, success against the highest grade of competition, success against the most diverse competition and activity. And that last one is very important because it's the reason why some huge stars are, you know, it's why Brock Lesnar isn't on the list, right? You just didn't wrestle enough to make the list. And the other thing beyond criteria that is very, maybe the most important thing to take into account is the evaluation period. And that's the kind of thing that very often kind of comes back to bite us you know, the valuation list pretty much is the halfway point of 1 year to the halfway point of the next year. So it's July 1st to June 30th. And that means we're considering a lot of stuff that happened a long time ago, by the time the magazine comes out, more than a year ago, and stuff that just recently happened, we cannot consider. An example of how that plays out is Big E being in the top 10. And some people see that and think, Big E hasn't been around for months. His title reign was however long ago. It only lasted a few months. And John Moxley not being in the top 10, coming off of, you know, a really great month plus that he's had probably the last 6 weeks, really kind of near the tail end of the evaluation period when he came back from rehab, won the interim title, and then went on to win the AW title, which happened after the evaluation period. So that's really important to consider. And again, sometimes when we end up, I don't know if I want to say looking bad, but I always go back to the year when The Miz was number one. This was back in 2011, and he had a really hot run as WWE champion for several months, retained at WrestleMania, beating John Cena. And by the time the list came out, I mean, Miz was way, way down in the cards,
right?
You know, kind of lower mid-card player. And here he is on the cover of our magazine, and we're saying he's the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah, there's definitely that lag time. I mean, that was always the thing, even when the magazines were your immediate go-to for wrestling stuff, is that you'd still be reading stuff from 2-3 months behind.
Yeah.
But when you consider that evaluation period going basically from summer to summer, and the issue is listed as a December issue, I can only imagine how that feedback comes back from people that are just like, what the heck, man? Didn't you just print this yesterday?
And yeah,
clearly you didn't.
It's confusing. You know, having a digital edition helps because we're able to get it out several weeks before the print edition. So the lag time is a little less, but it's still, I mean, here we are in mid-September and the evaluation period ended on July 1st. So it's already a couple months old.
You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. I'm Mike McGuire. Our guest this week from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Al Castle, one of the writers there, who's in charge of this year's PWI 500, the annual list that has wrestlers, fans, everyone debating about who should be where. Coming up, we're going to talk to Al more about this year's list, including the number one spot holder, the drastic changes he's gone through to get there. We'll talk about the women's rankings and a new tag team edition of the list coming out next year. Pretty cool stuff. If you're a fan of the old wrestling mags, stick around. More with Al Castle coming up.
You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Here in Canada, we have several regionally specific phrases that arise when said vernacular is considered appropriate, i.e., the funny-sounding term, shinny. Shinny is a game of ice hockey played without the standard head-to-toe body armor. Instead, only skates, gloves, a hockey stick, and preferably a helmet is worn. And if you're Mike Lackey, GLB's brewmaster, you wear the same pair of shinny pants day in and day out from December until March. A common code of ethics is employed during a game of shinny. For example, raising the puck off the ice is strongly discouraged for fear of being struck in the shins or worse, elsewhere. However, the most common practice takes place off the sheet of ice. Mandatory post-shinny beverages with your team, and boy does Great Lakes Brewery have the beer for that. Shinny Pants Session Stout, a beer inspired by Mr. Lackey's well-worn and well-stained pants.
Aw, man, you spilled beer on my shinny pants, bud.
Shinny Pants Session Stout. Drink it fresh, please.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Welcome back to the show. It's Mike McGuire here, and we're talking to Al Castle, one of the head writers for Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Their top 500 list just came out, the PWI 500, the digital version. You can download now. It's like $4 US. It's nothing. And I'm telling you, it's so much fun to flip through, even on a computer monitor or a tablet, and have that feeling. But definitely pick it up when it comes out. Coming up in part two of our interview here, you're going to hear about a current WWE star that effectively eliminated what could have been a number one ranking on the PWI 500 himself. Plus, we're going to talk more about Roman Reigns and what he's done to earn the top spot this year. And some exciting news if you're a fan of tag teams. Let's go back to my conversation with Al Castle from Pro Wrestling Illustrated right here on Sunday Night's Main Event. Trisha Dora, the Afro Punk.
Mm-hmm.
1,000 days as Pan-African World Disapora. Sorry.
Yeah.
World Disapora Wrestling Champion. So for those of us that aren't familiar with Trisha Dora, where does this come from? Like, how do you get this information on her?
Yeah. Again, there are people at PWI much more well-versed than me in the independent scene. Kevin McElvaney, the PWI editor, is certainly one of them. One of the things, you know, for many, many years when we were under Stu Sachs, Stu Sachs ran this magazine for about 40 years. Mm-hmm. We were very exclusive in what we recognize as world titles. And it was, again, a very, very exclusive club where the WWE championship, if there was two brands and two world championships, the NWA title, certainly when it was a national and international title, WCW, we briefly recognized the TNA championship and the ECW championship, and then later, I think, removed recognition. And when Kevin came in, I mean, he really had a different viewpoint of that. And, you know, reasonable people could disagree, but he definitely took a more inclusive kind of approach of, look, there's all kinds of wrestling out there, and they're very influential in different ways and have their audiences. So that list grew, and it grew to include Japanese promotions, you know, the New Japan, the IWGP heavyweight title, the Ring of Honor title, Impact back on the list, NWA championship, and also some independent wrestling championships. And that includes the one held by Trisha Dora. And she has got considerable influence, considerable recognition, not to everybody who doesn't follow that closely. And I'd even put myself on that list. But for those who know, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's another thing, too. Like you mentioned that a lot of your panel, a lot of your writers are East Coast centric, or, you know, maybe as far as central United States. But it is tough to get things from all sides. I know doing this show, for example, like Sunday Night's Main Event was based off of Live Audio Wrestling, which was based in Toronto pretty much exclusively for years. I'm in central Canada in the prairies. My indie wrestling exposure goes from BC to Manitoba and all points in between. So it's funny when I have guests on sometimes that even our audience will hear for the first time ever, you know, not even knowing there's wrestling in Western Canada, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there's this small family, I believe they were called Hearts from this area, you know.
So,
yeah, they might have done a couple things. But it's one of those things where, again, like you said, if you know, you know. When you get to that top 10, and I don't think it's a spoiler now that Roman Reigns is your number one guy here. How much confidence do you have with that? This year obviously had to be pretty easy.
Yeah.
But how many times have there been like serious stalls on who's getting that number one spot?
I'd say more years than not, there is a healthy amount of debate. Including last year, where I think, and I don't know how much we've talked about this, but I think it was last year that at one point Roman might have been slotted as number one, and then we switched it with Kenny Omega. And that's happened a few times where, you know, we've actually had plans for one and then shifted a course. And other times, I'll go back to the Miz year. I remember with Stu Sachs, who was our publisher at the time, he was not happy at all about The Miz being number one. what he hoped for that year, and I think in retrospect, you know, we would all love to have done it, was Edge that year, but Edge retired. And we had a rule that once you say you retire, and it doesn't mean just kind of stepping off TV and being gone for a while, but Edge said, I'm done. Yeah. And when he did that, he essentially disqualified himself from the list. And other years, it's just been very close. You know, I think of the years that when Okada was number one a few years back, it's happened where there was a healthy amount of debate. There was even some this year. I won't say too much, but I remember one of our writers coming to the meeting with somebody else in mind for number one who is in the top five. And there was more debate than you would expect on what seems to be such a slam dunk. But I think we reached a consensus pretty quickly that it was Roman. And I really think it's one of the strongest number ones we've ever had, you know, and that's not any kind of hot take. Roman's had just an incredible historic year.
Well, he's been positioned in a place as an actual elite top guy now, and it's kind of reversed his perception with fans, too. And yeah, I remember when Roman would come out and he would kind of get that Cena mixed approval and disapproval from the fans. And now, no matter what, as soon as you hear that Tribal Chief music, giant response.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this to, you know, shine shoes on the guy or anything, but it's legit. Like, the people go nuts for the guy. I was at Hell in a Cell in Chicago, and he wasn't on the card, but the best selling shirt in that building next to the I Was There Hell in a Cell shirt was the Bloodline. Everywhere you went, people were wearing Bloodline shirts. So I can't even argue with that. Now that you've said they were in the top five, though, I'm looking at number two, Kazuchika Okada. I'm looking at number three, CM Punk. Number four, Adam Page. And number five, Bobby Lashley. And I'm like, okay, you said it was one in the top five here. So I'm going to be just scratching my brain on that one. But
a couple things on Roman that I just thought of when you're talking about him there. You know, I hear that comparison a lot to John Cena. And I think WWE, Vince McMahon essentially used that as a defense for having Roman Reigns be a babyface for so long. And I really disagree that it was the same kind of energy, because men didn't like John Cena, right? I mean, like, guys in their 20s, 30s who were wrestling fans who were booing John Cena. Women and kids loved John Cena, right?
Yeah.
And my boys were younger when he was on top, and we'd take him to shows, and they were out of their seats every time John Cena came out. And I was too. I was always a fan. Nobody was rooting for Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns was, I remember going to a pay-per-view in Newark, New Jersey, when he was on top. I think it was when he was working against Samoa Joe. It might've been like Extreme Rules or something.
Okay.
Back in whatever this was, 2018 or something like that. Maybe 2019. It was main event time, and Roman comes to the ring, and fans started leaving. They you know, a lot of the crowd left in the middle of the match. And after he won, and he's posing on the turnbuckles, it was to a largely empty building, and they were just dead. And it's like, there's no way to justify this or explain that this is what you want. It just wasn't. And another thing you said, which I think is an important point, about him being positioned strong. And that's true. And in as much as the term that comes up a lot with this list is that it's a kayfabe list. And as a shorthand, that's true. But if WWE booked Omos, right, to go on the run that Roman did, I don't know that he would be number. Maybe reluctantly, we'd have to place him high. But it's not just that he was booked that strong. It's that he really took it and made it something special. You know, it wasn't just Roman being booked to go over. Roman in every way has carried himself like an absolute elite star over this run, in his match performances, in his promos, walking to the ring. I mean, it's just somebody who owns a character like few times I've ever seen.
Does Wardlow pinning 25 security guards count as 25 victories?
No. Well, were they sanctioned matches?
They pin them as, you know, like number so-and-so, you know, here's your winner, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. There might have to be a new debate in the PWI office, but
that might also go to quality of competition. So it probably only helps them so much. Yeah,
that's fair. That's totally fair. Okay. Well, Al, I want to thank you for this. I mean, I feel like we could talk for hours about this, and I definitely love to stay in touch with you with tentpole issues coming up.
Yeah.
PWI, but
we've got, this really is our busy season, and you know, we're kind of finalizing the women's 150 now. That's what's kept me busy the last few weeks. And right after that, now this is the third year that we have a tag team list also. And a little bit of news, it's been the tag team 50 for the last couple of years, and now we're expanding it to 100. And that's in some ways very relevant to this list, because there are wrestlers who didn't do that well on this list, or even were left off the list altogether, that I think a lot of fans were surprised to not see on this list. And I think part of it is now that we do have this other list, you know, you could take a team, and not to go on too long here, but you take a team like FTR, which is one of the hottest acts in all of wrestling and one of the most important acts in AEW and Ring of Honor and New Japan and even down in Mexico. I mean, these guys have been so huge. And realistically, but how do you rank each one individually comparing them to wrestlers who predominantly wrestle in singles, and it's difficult. And so I think we're trying to make more of a clean break in the distinction between tag team wrestling and singles wrestling. And you're starting to see that this year. And I think next year, even more so, there's going to be a clear delineation between the two.
One of the people behind the top 500 from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Get the magazine. You can get the digital version now. One thing's for sure, the magazine is always going to be an attention getter. And another thing for sure, if I'm Dustin Wilson, I'm ordering 100 of these for the merch table and first signing every one of them. No, I'm signing every one of them, you know, and you know, get that hustle out there. But Al, it's been great to talk to you about this list. Thank you very much for the time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Guys, I got to tell you, this really is one of the coolest opportunities ever to host this show, to be here with you, and to talk to guys like Al Castle from Pro Wrestling Illustrated about the PWI 500. Hey, I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, this show comes early and commercial-free if you're a member of our Patreon, plus tons of daily podcasts for about $1 a week. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. I'm out till next week. Thanks for listening and letting me do what I do. Play safe, drive safe. Ah! Bye, seeing ya.